Can a society without an understanding of ethics continue the function in a civilized manner? I believe recently in the classroom, I discovered that there is an area of weakness in what we have taught our youth. Most of my students could not define the difference between ethics and morals, nor could they define what ethics meant. They were also unaware of the philosophers that helped create ethical standards and bring it to the forefront in knowledge in the Greek stories. This situation led me to offer them a paradoxical ethical situation in which they would have to decide whether or not to take an action. Many of their answers were all over the place. We lacked a standard of what was right and wrong in a situation. Sit back, grab yourself a cup of coffee or whatever it is that you're into. You're listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden here on the America Out Loud News Network. Let's get emboldened.
America Emboldened.
Greg, I feel emboldened.
You don't know the founding fathers. You don't know what they did. You don't know what they sacrificed. We have lost touch with the principles in the Constitution. Nobody's read the Declaration of Independence. You are voting for socialism, and you got what you voted for.
Welcome, bold Americans, to yet another episode of America Emboldened. As always, I'm your host, Greg Bolden. There's lots to cover as we get into the show today. We got the bridge collapse in Baltimore. We have RFK Jr., who is officially announced, who I had speculated was going to be his vice presidential candidate, and that was correct. Nicole will be, as well as many big stories such as P. Diddy, the hip hop icon and mogul, has been raided and is under investigation for a sex trafficking lawsuit. But before I get into all of that today, I wanted to touch base on what I discovered in my classroom. Now, why was I talking about ethics and standards? Well, I was talking about the Society for Professional Journalists and the fact that they had a code of ethics, as well as other professions do as well. You go to become a lawyer, you better have a standard of how a lawyer is supposed to behave and a code of ethics. If you become a doctor, the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm, you better have a standard of care for patients to expect. So when I wrote on the board today the teach about journalism code of ethics, I just put up a simple couple words. My lesson plan for today was to cover, so students could define it back to me, what are ethics? When I asked the question to the room, it was quiet. And at first I chalked it up to the fact that it was 7:27 in the morning, and most people would be quiet at that point in time as well. Except that I teach the same class back to back, and by 9:30, those students in the second class were not answering any differently than the students in the first class. Some students would say, well, it's based upon your morals, which told me that students were confusing ethics and morals. I do believe that there is a difference between the two. See, ethics and morals are rules of conduct based upon the culture or group in a social system that's a standard. Your morals are principles or your habits that are going to relate to what is right or wrong based upon your own moral compass of what is right versus what is wrong. One is supposed to be a societal standard or a professional standard, while the other one is your personal standards that you have set for yourself. And so I started off with the traditional train trolley paradoxical assignment. And I asked the students, I said, there is a train just feet away, barreling down the tracks. You're standing next to a lever that controls track A and track B. You look over at track A where the train is going, and you realize that there are five people that are tied up on the tracks that are about to be hit by the train. You can pull the lever and send the train down track B and save the five people. What do you do? And I made sure that every student had to answer and had to answer quickly to simulate the same paradoxical assignment that I was giving. To say you don't have much time. So I'm asking my audience right now, what do? Do you flip the switch or do you let things go nature as it is? You didn't put the people there. See what happens. In my first class, more people decided not to take action, that they did not feel comfortable flipping the switch because they didn't put the people there, and maybe there was a reason why they were tied up on those tracks. This shocked me. This told me that as human beings, perhaps we don't have a standard of care about how we are supposed to treat one another. If I had asked this question of my class back in 2001 when I was in a classroom, I think at least 9 out of every 10 people would have answered, they pull the lever and save the 5 individuals. It is a moral decision based upon what you're doing, but the standard of care says we care for one another. What has happened over the last 23, 24 years? Why is it more people are saying, well, it's none of my business, I ain't pulling the lever? By my second class, I was encouraged to see there was a larger majority that would pull the lever and save the 5 students. In fact, I only had 3 students out of 20 that said that they would not pull the lever and they would allow the train to take out the 5 people that were tied up onto the tracks. This was a better representation of what I was expecting for ethics, the rules of conduct for the culture and a group of human beings. However, when I asked why they weren't pulling the lever, most people would say, well, I just don't think that it's up to me to save people's lives. And I said, would you be okay watching? They said, well, I turned my back. I wouldn't watch. I said, but you would still know that those 5 people lost their life. Then I turned to the other 17 people in that room, and I said, but I got to continue on this paradox. It gets better. When you sent the train down track B, you could not see that in the distance, there was a railroad worker that was working on the railroad, and the train went on to hit and kill him. And so, how do you feel knowing that you didn't know what your actions were going to do? You had no idea that pulling that lever was going to harm another human being. You thought you were saving the 5, but it still cost a life. Now, ethics and rules of conduct would tell us that most people should be happy that 4 lives were saved, right? You had 5 at risk. You saved those 5 but lost 1, so you net a positive of 4. But my students now were going, oh no, am I guilty of murder? And I was trying to explain, no, you're not guilty of murder. Well, what if I wasn't allowed to pull the lever? Well, I think there's no one that would say you shouldn't be allowed to pull the lever is what I said to them. But why are the rules changing? Well, if I knew I was going to kill somebody and I didn't put those people on the tracks in the first place, they told me that they would not touch the lever. The 5 people would be dead because they would not want it on their conscience that they killed somebody that was working on the railroad down the line, despite the fact that they would have had no way of knowing this. And so I asked them, what do they know about the Greeks? They knew nothing. I asked them if they remembered names like Plato. And my favorite response was one of my students said, oh yeah, this is the story about Aristotle. And we all started laughing, me and my aide that's there. And I said, yes, Aristotle, the philosopher with great genes, right? The philosopher from the mall. And I said, I think you mean Aristotle. And it was one of those moments where it made me happy to be an educator because these are the things that children come out with from time to time that just makes it a joy to teach because it was such an honest yet innocent answer. It was fun and it made me laugh and chuckle. But at the same time, I knew that the student knew the story about Aristotle. And so I started sharing some of the Greek stories and talked about how they tried to figure out what was the good life. What was the meaning of this? And how were we to act? Was there a culture that existed within humans? And is it wrong to ever kill? I started going to these larger topics with them. Should killing ever be justified of another human being? And again, the morality that came out was shocking. Some people said, well, yeah, sometimes I think, yeah, you could. It depends on the person's morals. And I said, well, wouldn't a human being just biologically know that according to the social system, it would be wrong without some type of justification. And so I believe that our school systems better start teaching ethics and morals in a better way to get individuals to start critically thinking. And here's why. I offered the idea of animals. Do animals wipe themselves out of existence because they all kill one another? Or is there a reason why one animal would attack another animal for food, for a mate, in order to show that it was dominant? It seems to me that in the animal kingdom, there is an order among their social system that says that killing of their own species is normally wrong, except in some circumstances. So why would that same system not exist for human beings? And then I asked them to apply one more thing to the paradox. I said, you've been thinking as a student standing alongside the train tracks. Now we're going to apply a social system to this, so you can understand the difference between your moral ethics, or your morals, and your ethics, is the way I meant to say it. And I told them, now imagine you work for the railroad. Your job is to keep people safe on the railroad. You are by the lever when the train's coming down, and you see a group of five people standing on the train tracks. You don't have time to stop the train, but you can flip the switch. What do you do? Amazingly, almost 100% of my students in both sides of the classes agreed that the most important thing to do in that moment is to flip the switch to save those five individuals. And they asked, are we still killing somebody further down the train track? And I said, well, you don't know that. That's not something that is known. But in that moment, what are you doing? They said, well, my job should require me to flip the switch, so I'm flipping the switch. Congratulations if you got there then, students, and to my bold American audience as well, because then you understand the social system and the social construct that comes with professional standards, and it should also come with being a human being. See, ethics, when applied appropriately, they can vary between some environments, but they're the external rules to the world. Morals are our personal principles, and our morals rarely change unless we are in an environment that has external rules, such as the ethics of our country, the laws, right? The things that we have. So we can have guided principles of conduct for an individual based upon laws or groups, and then we can have principles and morals on which one's judgments are right and wrong are based. We can also have ethics that get influenced by our profession, our field, our organization. Like, once I'm a teacher, I'm always a teacher. I was explaining to the kids, and when I leave the classroom, I'm still a public school teacher. Our morals, however, get influenced by society. They get influenced by culture and sometimes religions. Our ethics are normally related to our professional work as well. Our morals are not related to the professional workplace, and our ethics are normally uniform, where our morals can vary according to different cultures and religions. So, ethics, my students decided, were systems-based. They said that it was based upon a standard that should be known. And congratulations, students. That is a great growth in that moment to understand. So what is a standard of care when a story breaks early in the morning that the bridge has collapsed in Baltimore? The reason I bring this up is when the Key Bridge in Maryland collapsed in the early morning yesterday, I woke up to find that there were people pushing that it was a terrorist attack. One account with over 248,000 followers posted video from Crimea of a bridge blowing up and tried to say it was the Scott Key Bridge. Do you understand ethically what is wrong with this scenario, posting something like this on a social media network? So when I see an account with 248,000 followers that is putting out pure BS to their followers and people are getting scared that there's a middle of a terrorist attack, I've got to respond and say something about it. And so I did. I told this person, who goes by B. Gates is a psycho, I said, 248,000 followers and you're out here lying to people. I've driven over the Francis Scott Key Bridge and it looks nothing like this. You probably decide it was better to just use the Crimean Bridge for clickbait and follows. You are a bottom feeder. And then instead of just deleting the misinformation, this individual started to just block people that were criticizing them. Well, not only did I make it so they didn't block, but they actually did finally start the remove. Now, what is this person talking about right now? Well, there are things I talk about on my show, but I believe I talk about them ethically. I believe that I use my own morals as well to show compassion and care in it. Look, yes, the lights went off on this boat before they hit. They also came back on before they hit, before going back off. And I would say that, you know, maybe there could be a terrorist attack on the systems of the boat, except for that does not meet the burden of proof and scrutiny over the fact that officials said that more people would have died had it not been for the ship sending out a mayday call that they were having issues with their controls, which enabled them to shut down the bridge in a quick emergency and keep from more people crossing over it. Now, there are people right now that are at the bottom of the port of Baltimore. It is not time right now to dishonor their lives with your conspiracy BS. Right now, we want facts, and the facts are this. The port of Baltimore is one of the most important ports on the East Coast. It is home to $4 billion, maybe more. I got to find out all the rest, but the last thing that I found said something about $4.8 billion in exports of motor vehicles. It was $80 billion. That was the number I was looking for. I knew I had it written down somewhere here. $80 billion of goods were transported out last year. It is the 11th largest port in the nation. And guess what? It's currently closed. Now, if you're a Pete Buttigieg and you're the Biden administration, they didn't cause this. They get a pass from me on this one. But you know what they do have to do? They have to solve it. And in order to solve it, they're going to need to send these ships to New York City. They're going to need to send them to Norfolk, Virginia, perhaps even into the port of Wilmington, Delaware. And as they're bringing all these goods into these ports, they're going to have to get all of the truck drivers to take the ocean freight and then distribute it around the East Coast and bring it inland into the United States. This is going to come at an increased cost of fuel, at increased cost of goods, and in a time period where there's already inflation, this is only going to further the inflation and pass along the cost to us. This is a tragedy in all intents and purposes of what happened in Baltimore. This might be one of the biggest stories of 2024 because of the disruption that this is going to create to the entire shipping industry, not just within the United States, but within the world. There will now be companies like Amazon, Home Depot. There will be car companies from Ford, Hyundai, etc. They're going to have to figure out where are they renting their cars, and then how much more is it going to cost us to get food, cargo, from where it should be in Baltimore, which was a nice centralized location, another 180 miles with 695 closed because the bridge is now no longer standing. Let's not forget the fact they're also going to have to get tugboats and figure out how to clear this collapse from the waterway. They're going to have to get the boat that is currently taking on water because it had over 10,000 cargo crates on top of it. Some of them spilled out and got a hole in the hull. They're going to have to figure out how does that get logistically moved. It is a nightmare scenario. And it shows just how delicate our shipping industry is and how much we are vulnerable to meaningful impacts of a terrorist attack should that actually happen. So while people are taught about this, maybe it's good as a drill to think from time to time about whether or not we are secure, whether or not something could be a terrorist attack. But I don't believe we're doing anybody any ethical good in order to call something that clearly is an accident a terrorist attack within minutes of it happening and scaring the entire country. It is irresponsible. It's also irresponsible in one of the other big stories where everybody said that P. Diddy, Sean Puff Daddy Combs, had fled the United States and went to the Caribbean islands. Come to find out now, TMZ's got footage that says when they were simultaneously going after both his homes, he was at the airport. And guess what? They detained him in Miami. He did not get out of the country. In fact, he is still in the United States. Now, what was Sean Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, whatever his name is at this point in time that he prefers, what is he being accused of? Well, this one's good. You ready? He is being accused of human trafficking. That's right. Not just human trafficking, but sex trafficking. Okay. He was accused of narcotics and firearms violations as well. Now, this is a man who has been accused by others before. And let's not forget, he had some pretty close relationships with some interesting individuals. He's going to the islands, which sounds a lot like Jeffrey Epstein, on his plane, which happens to be an LLC called Love Air LLC. Almost like the Lolita Express, perhaps. He had a relationship, a good friendship, which we know if we look back through the headlines, with Prince Harry. Now, Prince Harry used to party with Diddy. And now he's not being accused of anything inappropriate, but you've got to wonder. After Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell saw Prince Andrew regularly cited throughout their case that he was participating in an orgy with underage victims that led him to eventually settle in courts, or out of court, so to speak, you got to wonder, what's going on with Harry? What's going on with Diddy? Why the attention here? And what's going on with the hip-hop world, as well as what's happening in Hollywood? This man is tied to a lot of individuals. There's been a lot of allegations throughout his life. Sex trafficking, sexual abuse, rape. I wouldn't put him on anyone's list of People's Magazine Person of the Year. In fact, I have a good friend. He often says that he blames P. Diddy for the fall of hip-hop music, really. Like, that's where he stopped enjoying it. And I would say, yeah, with the samples and biting of everybody's music, P. Diddy, you know, he was just synonymous with, I believe, the worst of where music went. There's a story that's been out there for some time that my students brought back to me about how the hip-hop entertainment industry had people that were financing private prisons, that some of those in the hip-hop industry were hoping to help pursue or promote a message of rap gang violence, of drug use, of sexualizing and telling people rape culture was okay in order to help fill up the prisons, hoping that the music would influence people. Now, that is an allegation that was out there that they told me about, and I looked it up, and there is a letter that is allegedly to have had a meeting. Now, Sean Combs, also known as Diddy, he also was sued by a singer and dancer named Cassie, who happened to be his former partner, last year in November. She said that there was years of abuse. It was filed in New York under the Adult Survivors Act just before her window for being able to file was almost over. Now, Cassie would go on to say that he had a pattern of abuse that began as soon as the relationship started. and he reforced himself onto her and raped her. And that court case is still being heard. There's another person, Little Rod Jones, all right, said he was subjected to unwanted advances by associates of Diddy at his attraction, or his direction, I'm sorry, and that he was forced to engage in relations with sex workers that Diddy had hired. Is Diddy just another Jeffrey Epstein? They said that they would see a lot of girls, maybe 5 or 6 girls outside, some leaving, some not, some going in, and that this was known. Joy Dickerson Neal, also in November 2023, filed a lawsuit against Diddy that he sexually assaulted and secretly recorded the assault when she was a college student in 1991. And that is a story that is currently going to be heard by the courts as well. And more women continue to come forward as well. There is an anonymous plaintiff who accused Combs and a singer-songwriter by the name of Aaron Hall of raping her and a friend in 1990 and 1991 at an MCA Records event. And behind all of this, there is an individual that starts to get tied to this. Does anybody know who Clive Davis is? Clive Davis is an industry mogul of Columbia Records. And Sean Diddy Combs and Clive Davis seem to be good friends based upon the work that they had done on albums. Well, Clive is also the person who I think is responsible for the death of one of the musicians in Milli Vanilli. See, he ended up actually taking his life with drugs and alcohol because he couldn't take the pain of what Clive and the record industry put him through. Now, if you get a chance, you should watch the Milli Vanilli story. It's a great documentary and will make you think a little bit different about the whole broadcasting and radio industry. But Clive Davis is without a soul if you listen to what you hear in these. This guy was all about money, 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 image, 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 deceit, 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 and just make a buck. He doesn't care or didn't seem to care about these artists as long as they were making money. And as soon as they were outed or as soon as he was done with them, enough was enough. And so Diddy's in trouble. I hope Clive Davis is in trouble too. I hope anybody who is related to sex trafficking is outed and we hear more. I think there's something big going on here. And then we have RFK Jr. He's finally announced that Nicole Shanahan is going to be his vice presidential candidate. Now, if you listen to my show, I already told you that was going to happen because I saw that the website was secretly put out there and started taking donations before people found it like myself, and they pulled it down. So I knew that Nicole Shanahan was likely the vice presidential candidate. I couldn't say without knowing for sure. He could always change his mind. It could have been, you know, some type of ops to just collect some money and make money. But this is a bad look, all right? This is not the move I would expect him to make if he thought he was a serious presidential candidate. This seems more to me like he's trying to spoil the election. Like he's trying to get in under some people's skin, take some votes away from a candidate. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. RFK Jr. is trying to take votes away from Donald Trump. And anyone who tells you otherwise is lying to you. Look at the platforms. RFK Jr. is going to get the anti-vax type of crowd that's going to say, well, look, autism, everything else, this is what this guy's talked about for years. Where Donald Trump is still promoting Moderna and Pfizer, which I don't really understand. I don't understand why that's still being promoted. But since we're on the topic of morals and ethics, I came under fire from a friend, won't use names, for the show that I did with Dr. McCullough and our guest, who said that they became a quadriplegic and showed us the doctor's notes, showed us the medical release forms that stated it was a vaccine injury. It was transverse myelitis, 3 in 100,000 people. They don't come down with cases as bad as Kayla did, but she did. And this individual believes that this is BS. This person believes it is not a legitimate injury and that this is a desperate person. This is a person who is somehow being enabled by death cult of Trump. And they think that I'm signing on to this as well. And they think that this person is just full of it. And they think that the Nazis are coming. And they're probably listening to this episode right now. I am kind of shocked. I'm shocked at what was written to me for a few reasons. I'm shocked what was written to me for the fact that this individual probably the first person to say all women should be believed. Back when Kavanaugh was running for Supreme Court, person probably would be the first person to stand on the front lines and talk about Me Too. But yet when it's a legitimate injury from somebody who was not an anti-vaxxer, somebody who actually received both her first two shots, and when it came time with being diabetic one to get her third shot, she received it again, and then she gets injured? And you want to say that this is an act? You want to say this is promoting an anti-vax narrative? That's not why I had her on the show. I brought her on to America Emboldened because she was offered MAID, medical assistance in dying, instead of actually trying to treat her. I brought her onto the show because it was an example of how socialized medicine is not compassionate medicine. That you lose your liberty and freedom to be treated the way that you want to be treated. You become a product of the state. You become a number to the state. And yes, I'm angry about this. I'm angry that there are people that are my supposed friends, I guess, that are thinking that I'm covering stuff. And they're saying, you know, socialized medicine helps people. You doing this S doesn't. It makes you feel good about your opinion while it's hurting thousands of others. You know what? It's not my effing opinion. These were the facts of the story that Dr. McCullough and I told of Kayla Pollack. I guess there are some people that lack compassion. I guess there are some people that aren't on an equal playing field with me. And I didn't want to judge, but I'm glad that they're judging me at this point in time. I'm glad that I'm seeing that they're lacking compassion and empathy. And I hope that they never, as I said to them, experience the same vitriol that they're tossing Kayla's way. I hope they never, while they still have young children, find themselves in a wheelchair, unable to use their legs because of a medication that they took, and their children can no longer get a hug from them while they're standing up. I hope that never happens. Because now I'm angry. I'm angry that there's a legitimate injury and people are willfully, with ignorance and malice in their heart, trying to go, well, my gut says it's not a legitimate injury, that it was there before they got the vaccine. And this is all part of a death cult of Trump. Do you people understand, if you're talking like this, how absolutely asinine you sound? In the middle of a legitimate injury, you want to push this on Donald Trump? This is the reason why I have to do a podcast. This is the reason why I got to talk about ethics and morals. Because I've got to get to the bottom of why people are so damn blinded by their political allegiance of the left and the right that they can't take the team humanity to look for what's best for another individual. And perhaps Donald Trump isn't going to ruin all of our lives. Neither is Joe Biden going to ruin all of our lives. But you know what will? Losing our ethics, the standard of care that we should have for one another. If we let that fall, society will go to absolute crap. And I will not let it happen as long as I have a breath, as long as I have a voice to give. I will make sure that people know that they deserve life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And no government should ever say, we're sorry, we don't have enough money to treat that. Think about the quality of care that you're going to have and your quality of life. Perhaps you should just kill yourself. And then have people say to me that that's faking. I'll be back on Friday, ladies and gentlemen. I need to cut the mic here. I've had enough. Hope I've honored your time well. I'm sorry that I'm upset here at the end of a show. I'm almost in tears, thinking of the lack of compassion that's being shown here. I don't have any other words. Make sure you go over to my Patreon if you get an opportunity. Patreon.com/AmericaEmboldened. Feel free to subscribe. Go to all the socials, all the different platforms. You can look up America Emboldened. Appreciate your support. You've been listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden. Be bold, America.